We're going to open up our word to Luke chapter 12 this morning. If you guys want to stand with me as we read, I do have one announcement as you're looking for that. For children's and youth volunteers, there is a training after service this morning. I want to remind you that's a lunch. I think it's a taco bar situation.
And
talk about it. And yeah, so do not leave if you are a children's volunteer or anticipate being one, because you have to get this safety protocol training once a year. And yes, if you decide to eat tacos, then you become a children's volunteer. All right. Well, let's approach the word, see what Jesus has to say to us this morning. Luke chapter 12, 13 through 21, it says this: "Someone in the crowd said to him, 'Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me.' Jesus replied, 'Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?' Then he said to them, 'Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions.' And he told them this parable: 'The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, "You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry." But God said to him, "You fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God." Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you eat, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap, and they have no storeroom or barn. Yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to your life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about rest?" This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Go ahead and take a seat. So before we dive into this very difficult, somewhat feeling personally attacking kind of passage, I do have a minor complaint. We were having dinner last week, and it's interesting, the model of this restaurant, Abruzzi's. Have you guys been there? The Fire and Vine? It's great. Good Italian food. They really, it's consistent. This is not a food review, just saying. But they add the, like, tip compensation on top of the bill. It just is, like, automatic. So you're going to pay 20% on top of your food bill, no matter what. And this takes care of the employees. Yeah, I'm like, maybe I'm getting older and I'm feeling more curmudgeonly, but it is driving me crazy how much the service industry is asking for tips. You know, yet like you order a cup of coffee at the coffee shop, and it's like it's just gonna ask you a question, and they turn the thing around. You know how they say that? Just gonna ask you a question. Yeah, and it's like 20%, 25%, 30% on top of your already $4.50 cup of coffee. And you're like, what is going on? Now, I understand inflation and the service economy is not supported well. I know they need help. But I'm not doing great either. You know what I mean? Like, where's my 20% tip? And doesn't it feel that way? Like, man, 50%. Thanks, Dixie. And I don't say this as like the church compensates me fairly, and our family's taken care of, and we got a really wonderful Christmas gift from you guys. Like, I'm not complaining about my income. I'm complaining about the cost of life. You get that? How frustrating it is? And you know, some of us probably feel, I mean, many of us are on fixed incomes. You're retired. Your income's not going to go up besides whatever Social Security decides you're going to get, or maybe you get an extra bonus with some of your investments. But the reality is, your hands are pretty tied when it comes to how much money you have. Some of us are really stressed out because our family environment's complicated and we've got hospital bills, or we're taking care of somebody. We just don't have the kind of hours that we need to generate the income to pay for this very expensive life. And then you buy a cup of coffee and they're like, could you double that so I can put some money in my pocket? And I'm like, no, I'll give you $1 because I know you're already getting paid for this. So that's my curmudgeon for the morning. Receive it, and we'll get into the passage. It makes sense. You guys will understand why. So we're on this series of treasures, going through the parables of Jesus, the ones where he specifically talks about money. And there's enough of them that we're doing an 11-week series on treasures and the economy of the kingdom of heaven. But when we talk about money in the church, walls start going up, don't they? I mean, we have not historically done a great job of talking about money and wealth in the church. Because historically, we've abused people, and we ask for money, and then the big churches do things that don't feel ethical or right, and so when it comes to, like, tithing, capital T, it's a four-letter word. I know that's a dangerous word to mention from the pulpit. People go, oh, church is just asking for money again, so your walls go up. I get it. I feel that, too. So I'm really, when I think about this passage and Jesus continuously talking about putting your treasures in places that are eternal, it really turns the heat up with us personally to go, okay, what am I doing with my money? That's a key question. And if we're not asking that question, we're going to get into deeper problems of our life, how we care for people, what kind of love is expressed in our lives. And ultimately, as we talked about 2 weeks ago, greed blinds us. Greed covers our eyes from the opportunities to invest in the kingdom. Greed tells us that what we have belongs to us, and we get to decide what we're going to do. Money is a very, very significant problem that we have to talk about. That's why we're doing this series. But this isn't just like a problem for today or 500 years ago. This was a problem in Jesus' time. That's why he talked about it so much. So welcome to some of the normal human conflict of what do I do with my treasures? How do I get taken care of? How do I know that the future is going to be stable for me so I feel safe? This passage, very frustrating story about a man who got a little extra, maybe a lot extra, and gets called foolish for saving it. Now, I'll just say out loud, this is not a rebuke on saving money. We're going to say that right up front. This parable is not a correction that we should not be saving our money. There is wisdom in saving. There are deeper lines drawing here that we're going to get through. The real concern Jesus is trying to get after is our sense of peace. And where do you find your peace? Where are you looking for security? That's what he's getting after here. So I'm going to offer four observations here, four P's, okay? We have problems, practice, holy pressure, and posture. We all have a problem with money. We all have this problem with needing a sense of security. We all have our practices, the things that we do to stay healthy or saving, whatever it is, we have these practices in place. And then we get this pressure, and what I'm calling holy pressure from God, this inner call. We can sense it. There's this holy pressure, particularly coming from Jesus in this passage, and he's calling out something. And then our posture toward Jesus and what he's asking of us. So in this story, we see Jesus, he's standing in front of a crowd of thousands, it says right at the beginning of Luke 12, a crowd of thousands. And he's teaching, and this person, this man interrupts Jesus and says, "Can you, Jesus, tell my brother to split the inheritance with me?" It's off topic. This is an interruption in Jesus' sermoning. But Jesus goes right after it, and I love the way the translation hits. Man, I can hear Jesus say that. Man, you're asking me to judge this? So here's where that's coming from, all right? So it's likely the inheritance of the father goes to the eldest son, right? So we've got the middle or younger brother maybe who didn't get as much inheritance as he thought he should because the older brother gets to determine where it goes. Now the middle brother, younger brother is following Jesus and he's listening to these things and he's like, "My older brother needs to hear this." You guys know what I'm talking about. Like, this sermon is for them. Jesus, can you tell my older brother about this stuff, the stuff you're talking about? And so here's how the splits financially would work out. So they would determine what's right and just, and then they would go to a rabbi. And rabbis were considered at-will judges. They could make a determination on financial matters. So what the man is doing is actually right. He's not wrong to ask Jesus to be the adjudicator. He's a rabbi. He's got a following. If Jesus said what was fair, it would have to be that way. But Jesus says, "I am not here to adjudicate your financial problems." And then he goes into this tirade about, maybe tirade's a little aggressive. But if you read the second half of Luke 12, it is rough. But he goes into this talking about where you find your value. What are you investing your money into? Because at the end of the day, you will likely be caught with nothing if you are not investing it in worthwhile eternal things. We all have this problem. And we come to God like this man, hoping he's going to adjudicate the financial difficulty. God, if you would just provide a little bit more. How many of us could go with another $1,000 a month? That's all we need, another $1,000. But then you get that $1,000 and you get more problems. And you get another $1,000, you get more problems. Maybe you've heard this statistic. They say there's a number of household income that equates to the most possible happiness before happiness starts to fade, right? This can speak a little bit to poverty as well, all right? So income and happiness increase together until about $90,000 in a year, at least in the United States. If you can bring in $90,000 a year, that's the most happy money will make you. They've proven this by surveys and statistics. $90,000 is about what we need. Pre-tax.
Oh, God.
We have a problem. But the reality is, after this measure, happiness does not increase. But the pursuit of happiness continues. That's why the rich keep getting richer, because they're looking for that deep satisfaction of happiness that money cannot buy you. That's why they say money can't buy happiness. It can, up to about $90,000. But anymore, and we all know, you just start getting more problems and you're investing in things that really weren't worthwhile. And then it starts to feel frustrating, like, why isn't the money helping? So going back to this tipping thought, many of us, you know, we freely tip. Right? And it feels like a generous thing to do. Sometimes you're embarrassed to not tip. And it gives that little bit of peace in that moment that you've done something well. And in this context, talking about money and faith and your walls going up and going, why is the church talking about my money? I'm not calling you greedy. I'm not saying you're a greedy person by feeling defensive about this. But I do want to call this out. Sometimes it feels easier to tip a dollar on a cup of coffee than it feels to make a tithe to the church. What a strange circumstance that is. Why is it that we feel so free to be generous to our waiters? But when it comes to pouring and investing our money into the eternal kingdom, we go, oh, can't tell me to do that. That's my money. You see where I'm going with this? Maybe not yet. When we talk about money, we are talking about a spiritual problem. That's why this has to be discussed. Jesus says this, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life doesn't consist in the abundance of possessions. So the greed isn't the selfish part. Greed is blinding us into the life that Christ is calling us to. So when we talk about money, Scripture informs us. And it's not neutral on this subject. So let's ask some of these questions. Let's go into this. What are our practices here? Why does the Bible talk so much about money? You guys have heard that. The Bible talks more about money than anything else. It doesn't, but it does talk about money a lot. It's constantly referencing the wealth of nations, treasures, barns, gold, wages, poverty. It's throughout. It's woven into the experience of the Israelites. It's the teachings of Jesus. The early church is always talking about money. Paul references money in like six of his letters, commends people for giving, rebukes those who didn't. This is a critical subject. And the Bible most often references money in this way, that it will possess you if you don't take ownership of it. If you don't take control over how money responds to the world, it will take you over. And I know I'm kind of going all over the place. I'm trying to be really careful here because I don't want to put the weight of giving on your shoulders. There's a matter of generosity and hope and promise that Christ is calling us into, but it feels so heavy. It's filled with abuses and waste. And it's frustrating. I'm trying not to take it too lightly. I'm trying not to use examples that are too trite. And I do want to be clear, I am not asking you for your money. This challenge of talking about a tithe, giving, is a very interior conversation in Christian discipleship. It's not evangelistic in any way. In fact, it would probably scare many seekers away if the first thing they heard was, you're going to have to give all of your money away. You're going to have to make sure that the things that you have don't possess you. And it's like, okay, I just need a little bit of a gap here. That's a tall task. Because I know, I've been a believer for 20 plus years, money still challenges me. I have not taken control over this problem. I don't expect a new believer to come in confidently and go, oh yeah, I've got control over my finances immediately. This is a lifelong battle. And we do have to talk about this in the church. So we see this. The man interrupts Jesus. They're in front of a crowd of thousands. He tells the man, I am not going to adjudicate your problem. And then the word says, Jesus turned to his disciples. He has this little conversation with his disciples. He tells the parable to them. But the crowds are still listening. I think there's something interesting here in how we discipline ourselves to follow the teachings of Jesus and how they live out to the seeking, unbelieving world. There are people on the fringes of our lives, maybe people in the seats right now, going, I don't know if I can trust this Jesus. I need to see the evidence that it actually works. I think that's why most often when we see Jesus teaching in front of a crowd directly to the disciples, he's pointing at there are interior conversations that need to be had and lived out, exemplified to the world, so they can see that this in fact works. That this message that I'm sharing and discipling you into is true. So the crowd gets to hear Jesus' expectations of the disciples. Isn't that interesting? Jesus turned to his disciples to share the parable. He didn't say it to the crowd. So coming back to this tithing question then, this is for us who know that we're on the inside, okay? If you are listening to this and you're thinking, I think Pastor Nathan's asking me to give money to the church, please don't follow that prompting. That is not where we're going with this. The treasure series hopefully is a matter of heart check. Where is my heart as it's postured toward the Lord and what I have and my possessions? Am I giving all I have to the Lord? And tithing is one of those heart check conversations that we have to talk about on Sundays. For those who are on the inside or you're compelled by this idea, I want you to listen to the Spirit of God, who I believe in my heart of hearts is present in this very moment, guiding us to the way of Christ in love, through peace. There's hope in this. Christ is calling us to a restored life, and there's practices, there's things that we have to put in place to discipline ourselves so that we can consistently follow the prompting of the Spirit of God. I've heard lots of great stories over the last couple weeks of people who have interacted with the Holy Spirit on a moment's basis. It has filled my heart to hear those stories. Clearly, we're touching on something that we needed to hear. I'm just a guy. I want you to know that. Like, I don't really know what I'm talking about. Maybe in some cases I'm a few steps ahead of you. For some of you, you've already figured this out and you're going, it's really good teaching, Nathan. I'm like, well, thanks. But I believe the Holy Spirit has put this on our plate for this moment in time. And I don't know why. But it is clear the evidence is working itself out. I can see what God's doing in your lives. We have this new challenge. Are you disciplining yourself? Are you putting into practice a consistent gift to God? Are you offering back to Him? Are you faithfully tithing? Those are real questions. And I need to be clear one more time. This is not the church asking you to pay the bills. The question I want us to be asking is your hope in what you've saved, or is it in what has saved you? Do you hear that? Is your hope in what you have saved? What you have earned, what you drive, where you live, your neighbors. Is your hope in that? Or is your hope in the one who has saved you? And I think that's where this parable hits. He's asking where your hope is. Questions you might be asking yourself. Do I feel safe? Am I afraid of losing? What do I need to protect? Those are very human questions to be asking. Will there be food on my table? Will I be able to pay my electrical bill? What do I need to protect? How do I feel safe? What am I afraid of losing? Those are the core questions, aren't they? The kind of things that motivate us to work a little harder, earn a little more. Jesus is putting pressure on how we practice asking these questions. A holy pressure. So in this parable, we see the wealthy man. He gets a little extra or a lot. It's enough that he says, I'm going to tear my barn down and build a bigger barn. Now, for some of us who are really good at saving money, you're thinking, yeah, that checks out. It's a good idea. You get extra. You need to find a place to put it. It's good business practice, right? Interestingly, though, Jesus calls out something that didn't seem natural in a first reading. So he does something really interesting here. Who is the rich fool talking to in this story? Himself. He doesn't source advice from anywhere. He doesn't talk to anyone. He doesn't even consider what God is asking him to do. God never appears in his plan. Listen to what James says in chapter 5. James chapter 5. Your wealth has rotted, moths have eaten your clothes, your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. There's a pretty strong rebuke here for this kind of hoarding wealth. And Jesus talks right at it. He calls this man a fool. That's like a curse word in the Bible. If you're not familiar, Proverbs even tells us you shouldn't call anyone a fool. It's like the worst insult of the worst insult. Why? Where's the... I've got it written down. Maybe I deleted it. I think it's... Sorry, hang on. Psalm 14:1. A fool says in their heart, there is no God. The foolish things, according to the eternal perspective of God, it's like he doesn't even exist. That's what Jesus is kind of sneakily doing here. We don't see it because we don't have that kind of rhetoric in today's world. But then if you're only talking to yourself, he's getting at something. Because remember, this is a community effort. Everyone's involved in everyone's lives. They don't have this kind of modern liberal life where everyone lives on their own and makes their own decisions. Everyone relies on everyone else. And so this man gets extra and he doesn't ask anyone else what he should do with it. And Jesus calls him out, this fool, a rare insult. He wasn't a fool because he had a barn. He was a fool because he had no room for God or the needs of others in his life. My crops, my barns, my goods, heaping up treasure for myself while ignoring his own spiritual poverty. Picking up in chapter 12, verse 41. I told you it gets really intense here. Remember, I just read James 5. Listen to this. So Peter turns back to Jesus. Lord, are you telling this parable to us? Or are you telling it to everyone? And I skipped a paragraph here, but he gives two different examples. So I'm jumping to 47. He says, the servant who knows the master's will and does not get ready or does not do what the master wants will be beaten with many blows. But the one who does not know and does things deserving punishment will be beaten with few blows. That's better, at least. From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked. I have come to bring fire on earth, and how I wish it were already kindled. But I have baptism to undergo, and what constraint I am under until it's completed. Do you think I came to bring peace on earth? No. I tell you, but division. From now on, there will be five in one family divided against each other, three against two, two against three. They'll be divided, father against son, son against father, mother against daughter, and daughter against mother, mother-in-law against daughter-in-law, and lastly, daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. What an uncomfortable passage. Now, let's pull it back. Remember, before he goes into this, the man asks Jesus to settle the dispute against his brother. Jesus says, I'm not going to settle your disputes. And then he goes through all of this. It says, in fact, your human concerns about wealth and money and provision are only going to divide you when I tell you what's really happening here. It's going to make you very uncomfortable. In fact, people are going to stop liking you. The conflicts are going to get worse because my ask of you is so much greater than what you can even think about. Friends, Christ is calling us to a standard so high in this passage about what we do with our money that it will start to break down relationships. That's what he's saying. And that is very difficult to handle. What are you doing with your money? Why are you giving it there? Why are you being so blah, blah, blah? Save your money. Invest it in 401ks. My pastor said I shouldn't retire. Well, I didn't say that. It's shocking, you guys. When we look at Jesus, the Prince of Peace, outright says in this passage, I did not come to bring peace. This is not we're not justifying holy war. This is not a passage to excuse being a jerk to somebody. What Jesus is describing is the inevitable result of this message. He's warning that the gospel is so polarizing, it will split even the closest family members. Because our commitment to the truth of Jesus' word outweighs culture, family, law, expectations. The world does not get a say in what Jesus is asking of you. And that will split lives. Friends, eternity is calling us to live in opposition of the dying world. Jesus is diagnosing this matter of adjudicating the brother's disagreement, and he goes to this gut level thing about fixing money problems and how difficult it is to become his follower. The call is going to cost you everything, disciples. It's going to cost you everything. Listen, church, I know many of us are in dire financial crises. But I tell you what, if you decide to buy here on earth, in this dying world, you are in a deeper financial crisis. The instinct is to build a bigger barn, to hoard, to hedge, to grip tightly to what you've been given. To speak financially, the man makes a foolish, high-risk investment on a failing security. He invested in something that was bound to fail, and he put everything in it. He expected he was going to be around to enjoy the pleasures of the future. And lost everything. Why does our tithe matter? Church, when we tithe, especially in the face of this current economic environment, you are not losing 10% of your net worth. You're reallocating. You're turning your capital from a volatile, depreciating, dying market into an eternal investment in the kingdom of God. Heaven's immune to inflation, recession. What you pour into the kingdom of heaven will bear fruit. Tithing, friends, is the ultimate hedge against the financial anxieties you're feeling right now. It breaks your dependence on the world's false securities. Things are constantly going in default around us. When you tithe, it stakes your claim in the eternal kingdom of God. In short, this parable is about moving your assets from a barn that's scheduled for demolition into an eternal storehouse that governs the universe. You guys hear that? Friends, we are called to a different posture, tithing through the lens of God's abundant provision. This is not a transaction. This does not place you in God's good favor. Applewood doesn't need your money to survive. But you might need the tithe to keep your soul from drowning in the anxiety of a dying world. Church does not need your tithe. God has taken care of us. I don't know if you've looked on the back of your bulletin, but 2025, God took care of every last penny. I know many of you have been faithful to give. But God is the one taking care of this church. Just like he's the one taking care of you. We don't need your tithe. But you might need the tithe to keep your soul from drowning in the anxiety of a dying world. It sabotages that spirit of greed that wants to blind you and own you and tell you to buy more, keep it safe, protect, hoard. Friends, when you take out of that pile and you rip it out and you go, I'm giving this to God. Ah. It softens that nerve, that nervous reaction where our bodies go, I don't know if I'm going to have enough. And you go, well, God says I'm going to have enough. And I give it to him where in a place where I don't have control, and he gets to decide. And I go, what he's given me is enough. What I have in my pocket is enough. Who told you to worry about what clothes you were wearing or what food was going to be on your table? Where did that come from? I am taking care of you, he says. We have to discipline ourselves. We have to practice that daily. I am not going to let the wealth blind me to God's provision. For some of us, we have to rip that money out of our lives. I got to be honest, you guys. Jess and I have been tithing 15 years, maybe more. The Lord came after me. He convicted me. I told you a few weeks ago, we did not have a lot of money. So a tithe on $500 a month is not a lot. But Malachi 3 says, test me in this and see that I will overflow your barns if you just give back to me. Friends, the church doesn't need your money. You need to tithe for your soul, for your dedication to what God's doing in your life, because everything you have belongs to him. Trusting yourself in the abundance of the kingdom. Tithing reveals whether your hope is stored in the barns that you've built or in the God who made the grain grow. That's what he's saying. Don't build a bigger barn. Do something with it. Get it out of your pocket, because I have enough for you today, and I will have enough for you tomorrow. As I wrap up, I'm going to invite my team back. So here's what I want you guys to do. And in a matter of posturing yourself in faithful offering back to God, if you are not consistently tithing to the church, I'm going to ask you, don't start. But I'm asking you, find a kingdom place to put that money. And 10% is like a bare minimum in my mind. If you're not giving to the church, find a place to put 10%. And I swear to you, God is going to demonstrate himself faithful to you in more ways than you can imagine. And it's not putting more money back into your pocket. There is a partnership in God's kingdom activity that cannot be bought. It only comes through sacrifice of offering ourselves back to God. Maybe it's a mission work. Maybe it's a food bank. Maybe there's something out there or another church. Start tithing to Redemption, who meets here on Sunday nights. But don't leave that money in your pocket, because it might not be there tomorrow. What a waste. Don't waste. Invest in the kingdom of